Welcome to Accounting High.
I think sometimes as people try to venture into the advisory space, it's like, okay, advisory, like, what do I do? And what Summit taught me is it is. Yeah, it's totally overwhelming, particularly for accountants who can be more introverted and maybe introspective. But they gave me a framework for how to structure and lead client meetings. That was very helpful for me in learning how to effectively deliver advisory services. Because what it does, not only does it make you feel like you're in control and like know what lane you need to stand, but it also, I think, enhances the client experience, right? The client
feels taken care of.
Check me out right here, yo.
Yeah, right. This March Madness game is so tight. Start with the 64-team bracket. We did it right. Journey ends with two now. It's Stats and Uncat. Uncat came too far to bow down to Stats. Jason may think he can plow through Uncat, but when he making up facts, they raking up Stats.
Welcome, students, to another brief tournament update. This is the Accountant Bracket Challenge, Year 2, 2024. Nominations are open. What's up, Byron?
What's happening, man? Nominations are live. I'm amped.
Nominations are live. Where do they go to nominate?
Let's go to abc.accountinghigh.com. So easy. We got the LinkedIn integration set up. It's so smooth.
We want to keep the integrity of our students here, so everybody's logging in with LinkedIn, just so we don't get any foul play.
No puppies.
This is the Accountant Bracket Challenge, not the Puppy Bracket Challenge. That will be for next year. We'll do the Puppy Bracket Challenge. ABC Tournament, tune in. This is live. So today we're going to talk to you about what to do to nominate and give a little love to our sponsors for 2024. So yeah, you're going to go in, you're going to nominate your top five favorite things in the accounting space. This could be technology apps. This could be podcasts. This could be communities. This could be people. Anything that makes your accounting life better, go in and nominate today so they can be represented in this year's 64-team bracket. Byron, tell us about our sponsors.
Yeah, we got our favorite financial institution, Relay Bank, returning for year two. Excited to have them sponsoring the tournament again this year. We've got my alumni, BotKeeper, also sponsoring this year, which is pretty sweet to have them along. And Stanford Tax, brand new to the sponsorship for the tournament.
Brand new to the space, too. This is a new app. This is beautiful. If you haven't heard of Stanford Tax, please go check them out. If you haven't heard of BotKeeper, go in and nominate them today, too. If you know of them, BotKeeper's the coolest kids in town. Byron used to work there. Go in and be sure to nominate Relay. Relay has been the savior to a lot of accountants. It's an online bank. It's great. If you haven't heard of them, check them out. Stanford Tax, check them out. All of them. We love our sponsors. Thank you. They're what makes this tournament possible. That's what's going to make the prize possible. So I kind of hinted last week, our big prize last year was Hawaii. I thought we might do that again this year, but thought I might throw an audible as we do with this tournament. Now that we've got the sponsors locked in, it's time to get the prize locked in. This year, we're going to give away an Apple Vision Pro. We're going to give goggles away this year so you can go to Hawaii in your living room.
That's right.
You want to go to Hawaii, go VR. Go anywhere you want. If you don't like Hawaii, you want to go to Aruba, go there. Anywhere you want, go there in your new, brand new Apple Vision Pro headset. So
you can go to the moon if you want to go to the moon.
Go to the moon. You could go to Mars. You could go anywhere. So if you want to win this, how do they win, Byron?
Oh, well, you got to number one, nominate. Well, actually, number one, you got to sign up. So you got to enroll at Accounting High at abc.accountinghigh.com. Then nominate. Every nomination and every testimonial with those nominations, you're going to earn raffle tickets. Every time you earn a ticket, you're going to be entered for a chance to win prizes, and there will be random drawings for those prizes. So the more nominations, the more testimonials, the more voting you do, the more chances you have to win.
So right now, they can get their 25 tickets just by nominating five things. So stay tuned. We got a lot of cool stuff that we'll be giving away, and the raffle tickets are the vehicle for that. So we love our sponsors. The 2024 sponsors are Stanford Tax, Relay, and BotKeeper of the Accountant Bracket Challenge, the ABC Tournament. Go in and nominate today.
Get it. See you there.
And it's abc.accountinghigh.com. Go there and log in and nominate today. Thanks, homies.
Welcome back, Accounting High. Now it's time for social studies. We'll teach you new creative ways to market old product. Move beyond basics with graph and stats. Some studs you love. Position like Laura Lynn and you learn it's not all luck. Oh wait, now it all change. SEO down, IG up. ICX, Meta, TikTok, hey, LinkedIn, Roman V up. If you watch how they post, you'll see it's all authentic and genuine. Grow a following and don't get held back by perfection. Be intentional online, create content. Now that's hot. Strategy is key with social media and pod. Start slow, pick a platform, stick to it and go. Post, make a plan to engage with client watering holes, create a focus brand, be a lead online. It's a digital world with the best ROI. Now create your own ideal client persona. Let's go. Keyword accounting high and get ready to blow. It's time for social studies, accounting content hub, LinkedIn marketing or X. So come join our social club. Is it Twitter? Is it X? Shit, now I can't keep up. So comment, follow, love if you're into social studies. It's time for social studies, accounting content hub, LinkedIn marketing or X. So come join our social club. Is it Twitter? Is it X? Shit, now I can't keep up. So comment, follow, love if you're into social studies. Follow this show, stay in the know. Thought lead online through networking. Like, share, repost, subscribe, YouTube, comment, engage, create, find your way.
Introducing the star of our show,
Scotty and Swaggy P.
We're gonna have a problem here.
All right, class is in session. Students, you're in for a treat. We got Rev Swaggy P with me here today. I call him Rev Swaggy P, kind of a shout out to Reverend Run, and you'll hear why he's Rev Swaggy P in a minute. But his real name, his real ego, not his alter ego, is Mr. Paul Seaton. Paul, are you a CPA too?
I am a CPA. It took a long time to get there, but I do have those letters behind my name now.
So we'll say CFO, CPA, Paul Seaton, agency CEO, if you want to look up his practice. Paul, you're coming to me live from Wichita?
Wichita, yeah. Yeah, the heart of flyover country. Don't forget about us.
Don't forget about Wichita. Don't write off Wichita. Well, Paul might be writing your stuff off. Paul, introduce yourself to our students here.
Yeah, Scott. Well, it's great to be here. I know it's been a long time coming. Thanks for having me on, man. I love what you're doing in this space. There's a lot of people that have come on this show that I certainly look up to. So I'm lucky to be here today. Yeah, so started my practice full-time a little less than 18 months ago. As you mentioned, I run agency CFO. We do outsourced CFO and accounting work for marketing and digital creative agencies.
You could have had two kids in that time frame. How many kids do you have?
I've got three kids under five. Yeah. So
three
it's
kids under five. Yeah. Did you have one of those kids while you owned your practice? Or are they all over 2 years old?
Yeah. My youngest is, she'll be two in April. So when I started, she was 5 months old. Genevieve was 5 months. Yeah.
Okay.
Wife has stayed at home full time the last 5 years. So yeah, it was a little bit of a risk leaving the cush W-2 job to start my practice. But as far as I know, my mortgage just is still being paid, and here we are. So.
All right. Well, we'll get there. We'll get to the present, but let's start with the past. Let's talk about how you got here. And why don't you share with our listeners a little bit how you got into accounting? Because from what I understand, that's not what you went to school and that's not what you set out to be.
That's right. So I originally went to school because I thought I was going to be a Catholic priest, believe it or not. So I grew up in New Mexico.
Is that a Catholic priest? Is a reverend too? Like Reverend?
Reverend, yeah. Father, yeah. Reverend. If you ever see like a priest's name on a document, it's R-E-V, Rev.
Okay.
Yeah, so I grew up in a devout Catholic family. Big family, one of seven kids. My parents' deal was that, hey, we'll help you pay for college if you go to a good Catholic school. Saw my older siblings do that. And I had a really awesome Catholic priest who was involved in my life growing up. And he just had a joy and like a fervor of life about him that I really wanted. I was like, man, Father Rick is just, he's the happiest dude. And quite simply, I just wanted that. I was like, well, I guess you got to be a priest if you want to be as happy as someone like Father Rick. So I went to school at a little school called Benedictine College in Atchison, Kansas. It's a little sleepy town about an hour north in Kansas City. And yeah, studied theology quickly.
I don't know how many jokes I can make about Catholic priests here, like on air. I guess I could or I couldn't.
No, not at all. And so I went to study theology. I always kind of had a knack for business. My dad was an entrepreneur. He ran his own consulting practice growing up. And that's what I saw. My dad worked out of the house and he was always there for my basketball games and my football games.
What type of consulting?
He was a private lender. So he had a background in commercial banking and then opened his own private lending practice, gosh, 30 years ago. And so what my dad said, look, if you want to go into business and do what I do, you should go become a CPA. Like that's the fast track to grow your business career. And so once I realized that I didn't want to be a priest, which meant I got to college and realized how many beautiful women there were on campus, I said, yeah, I'm not sure if this priesthood thing is for me. So I took the practical advice and switched my major to accounting and finance.
You did say that your wife was the reason you did not become a priest. So you can thank her for that.
Yes. Yes. Shout out to my beautiful wife, Annie.
The accounting community can thank her for that too then, right?
That's right. That's right. So,
and I guess the Catholic Church can also thank her for that too, because you didn't become a priest. So they may not be thanking you, but there you go. So
for the best, certainly.
Yeah. 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 For the best. So you ended up actually pivoting. It's a pretty big pivot to go from what, but is it that big of a pivot? Let's talk about some similarities too, as we go, in being a teacher and an educator to your clients and helping them versus to your parish. In a way, some of these might be similar.
Totally, yeah. I've had a number of people tell me that if I wasn't in business, they could see me as a therapist, believe it or not. I know my mom's told me that. A few other people have told me that as well. And that's kind of what we do as accountants and advisors, right? We listen to our clients and try to solve their problems. But it all has to start from kind of a disposition of listening and seeking to understand before giving any sort of guidance and wisdom. And so in a way, I guess you could say it was a little bit of a natural pivot in terms of where I'm at now in my career. I'm not just a pure accountant. I kind of lead with the CFO service. Mm. So
ushering a new era for some CPAs. But as you were in school, as you were learning, what did you set out to do? What were the possibilities for you as a CPA, as a young CPA? Because I don't get too many guests on that actually set out to do this. This was your first pivot, essentially, is CPA accounting, right?
Yeah. And in terms of launching my own practice, Scott, it's funny. I kind of stumbled into it. So I was fortunate enough to get a job at Deloitte right out of school. I went and worked in their audit practice in Kansas City, where I audited a big telecommunications company that has since merged with another big telecom company. I won't use their names, but if you could think of the biggest merger to happen in the last 5 years in the US, I was kind of in the crosshairs of that. And a friend of mine was running a video production and social media marketing agency in Nashville. And he said, hey, dude, I know you're a CPA. I'm not thrilled with my bookkeeper. Could you do my books? And it was at that time, this was like, I don't know, 18 months into my life as a public accountant at Deloitte, that I discovered the role of cloud and QuickBooks Online. I didn't know that existed. And then he just said, yeah, I just have to give you my login and you can do everything from Kansas City. And so that's when I discovered that there was this whole world of cloud accounting and serving clients remotely, that I got into the cloud accounting space.
Ooh, yeah. But that was exciting. And you're also doing it for somebody that was in a new field too, social media. Like, what was this job? What was he doing? Was he like influencer, or he was working with like marketing, social media marketers?
Yeah, so they're primarily a video production company.
Okay.
Yeah, and then they take the content that they produce and will put it up and manage their clients' social channels.
Is this still a client today, or was this just cracking open the door?
Yeah, so that was, gosh, 6 years ago. They're still a client today, believe it or not. I was at their Christmas party 4 weeks ago. They'll probably do a little over $4 million in revenue this year. At that time, they had just topped out at 300K the year that I came on. So it's been fun to be a part of their growth journey these last 6 years. Yep.
How did you view doing this work in the beginning? Did you look at it like a CFO, like somebody that was going to help them grow? Like, what was, as a young reverend, I'm going to still call you reverend, as a young rev here, what was it like to look at the financials at that stage?
Yeah, so
you were
back
still
then,
employee at Deloitte at the time, right?
I was. Yeah, this was
something okay.
Doing on the nights and the weekends. I mean, I was fumbling through YouTube videos trying to learn how to reconcile a bank account, because in your day to day as an auditor, you're not doing day to day accounting, right?
No, so I was kind of looking behind. They're
totally
in the rear view.
Yeah. So I was learning like how to work bank feeds and reconcile credit cards and bank accounts. You know, for the first year or two, it was pure play bookkeeping. And then they started asking questions about, hey, where should we spend money and when can we hire and how much should we pay ourselves? And I didn't understand the delineation between bookkeeping and advisory then. It was like, okay, well, I guess I'll Google this. And so I was just trying to find as much content as I could to advise this client appropriately because they had no one else. And that relationship naturally evolved into accounting plus advisory. And then that's when I decided, okay, I'm going to go work at a firm that can kind of teach me the ropes of how this stuff really works, which is where I went.
Well, what about the content that you found back then? You were searching and you actually found some stuff that led you in the right direction. What type of content was that? Who was producing it? Do you remember?
It was a podcast. There were a couple. So Marcel Petipaw, the guys at Parakeeto, that was super influential. They have the agency profitability podcast, I believe it's called. And then the team at Summit CPA Group, they had a podcast where they really dove deep into agency profitability metrics. And I was just eating that stuff up as much as I could.
They still do have great content out there. Shout out to our callback a few episodes with Jody that we've had. You can go back and check those out. Jody's usually the speaker for Summit, or he's typically the one out there sharing that content. And that kind of led you to then, now I need to go work somewhere and figure this stuff out. Did you go somewhere with that in mind that you were going to be a CFO and somebody that would be doing that? Or did you still apply to this job as an accountant?
My wife has told me, she said, Paul, you are so stubborn in the best ways. I don't see you having a boss forever. I think part of that came from my dad. He never had a boss, right? He ran his own consulting gig growing up. So whether it was conscious or subconscious, I probably knew deep down, I'm going to end up doing my own thing because I don't like being told what to do, which has its pros and its cons. So I ended up going to work at Summit, learned a ton there, got to work with a bunch of amazing agencies, and really got to dive under the hood about just what are the day-to-day problems that agencies are dealing with beyond just the financials, right? Because that's how you can really be an effective advisor, if you understand their business problems. And so, yeah, learned a ton at Summit, learned how agencies work, learned that they function a lot like accounting firms. They can be a little bit of a roller
services.
Coaster. Yep.
Tell me one of the first things you learned as you were working there. First, if I could synthesize some of it, you learned that making content is very valuable, not only to the agency owners, but to other accountants, because you were out there consuming some of their content beforehand. And they're one of the few people, especially then, putting out content.
100%. Yeah. I think too, not only is content helpful for client acquisition, but also talent acquisition, which was the case for Summit, right? Like I was in the background, not really engaging with their content, but consuming it. And, you know, when I got on the interview with Jamie and the team, I felt like I was talking to celebrities, people who had already taught me so much. And I felt spoiled rotten that I got to go work for them.
Yeah. So they created the opportunity for you in a lot of ways. But I want to hear some of your interactions, because this is a virtual firm that you're working for. They were doing things very different compared to most other CPA firms. They were sort of the pioneers. I like to say they're, you know, one of the OGs of this rap game of running a practice. That's what I say, learning how to rap in our forthcoming book. So tell me some of the other things you learned there as you got the privilege to work for some of these rock stars, rap stars.
Yeah, I think the biggest overall takeaway that I had, Scott, was the framework for how to have effective meetings with clients. I think sometimes as people try to venture into the advisory space, it's like, okay, advisory, like, what do I do? And what Summit taught me is, it is. Yeah, it's totally overwhelming, particularly for accountants who can be more introverted and maybe introspective. But they gave me a framework for how to structure and lead client meetings. You know, they have their results call meeting, they have their sales pipeline meeting, they have their cash flow meeting, they have their forecast meeting. They have kind of, there is a very dialed in method to the madness where you can uncover a lot of business problems and help them solve a lot of business problems through kind of a methodical framework that I see very few firms kind of exercise. And so that was very helpful for me in learning how to effectively deliver advisory services. Because what it does, not only does it make you feel like you're in control and like know what lane you need to stay in, but it also, I think, enhances the client experience, right? The client
feels taken care of, and they don't feel like they're on this runaway train journey of, oh, everything's possible, and here's all the things that we can do, here's all the things we're going to do. This is this meeting, and this is the focus of the meeting. This is what we're going to talk about. And then you've created a cadence for that too. So tell me, in a way, how often were you meeting with your clients, and how did this cadence switch up? Like, was it one focus for the whole meeting, and then the next one you're talking about something else?
Yeah. So the beautiful thing about this meeting structure, there's a framework for it, right? But every framework has flexibility to it. So we might spend the first half of a call talking about the month-end financial results, but then the beauty of it is that leads to organic conversation about what's actually going on in the business, right? So first half of the call, there's a subject you're going to talk about, whether it's cash flow or month-end results or the forecast, but that naturally leads you to discuss strategic decisions and things going on in the business that they need to look at through a financial lens, right? So, you know, I always kind of had a knack for entrepreneurship. Since I am an entrepreneur, I'd like to think about things holistically. Like, okay, you had a $20,000 loss or a 20% loss this month. What led to that, right? Just asking good questions can lead to really good conversations and really helpful outcomes for your clients that transcend the just delivering the data and the information.
So there isn't necessarily even a plan for the entire call too, but it's a plan of what questions you're going to ask, or knowing which questions to ask when reviewing and listening to the client. You have to be a good listener. Is that right?
Yes, you have to be a good listener, and you have to be willing, particularly in your role as a consultant, to push the boundaries of the hard conversations, right? I've had a number of conversations with prospects over the last few months where they'll say, you know, I'm working with the CFO, but they're not hard enough on me, right? And when it comes to advisory services, what has surprised me is that clients want you to push them and to make things uncomfortable and to have the hard conversation, because you as an outsider, it's easier for you to do, right? You're not a member of the day-to-day team.
You're not as emotionally invested.
No, you have more of an objective viewpoint, and you are speaking from an objective part of the business, which is the numbers, right? You're not the head of people or the head of marketing and sales. You're leading the finance function.
Having that objective perspective is very important as an advisor. Give me an example of one of these difficult conversations you may have had recently with a client. How did they receive it? How did you approach it?
Yeah, so there have been several that I've had as of late. Yeah, I had a conversation recently with a smaller agency. They have, I think, 11 employees. They're very efficient in their delivery margin, right? So if someone works a billable hour, there's great margin on that billable hour, but have a very big leadership team. And so their leadership team is making up 40% of their entire cost structure. And they're sitting here wondering, man, our delivery team is well utilized. They're efficient. They're staying within budget, but we're not making any damn money. And so, guys, well, look, the issue is sitting on this call. Like, these, everyone on this call is expensive. You're not billable. And we have too many people on the leadership team to drive the margin that we want to have, right? And it's like, oh man, like, I hadn't thought about that. That's a tough conversation, right? Because the issue that the business is facing is sitting right in front of you.
You're speaking to the issue. And you called it out too. And now everybody knows they are the problem on that call. One of them may have to go. What was the outcome of this conversation?
Yeah, so thankfully, no, headcount did not have to be reduced, but we were able to establish a very clear roadmap in terms of where they had to get from a sales standpoint before they could add to their leadership team. Because before this conversation, they said, hey, we want to add a head of sales and marketing. Like, well, look, we don't have, like, our leadership team is already too big. And so someone from this call, if we want to keep everyone, it's going to have to step in that role until we get to a certain point from a sales standpoint. And it's subjective, right? It's not like picking favorites or I'm saying it has to be this way. It's just all numbers driven. But you can give a human voice and a human perspective to it that's objective. Yeah.
Yeah. You had no hidden agenda to make that call either. There was no second guessing. You were just stating the facts. And that's very keen. Let's go back to this journey of building your own firm and starting out. So you learned a lot. Summit trained you well. Young
Absolutely,
pastor
no.
in training, young reverend in training, young CEO in training, CFO. How long did you stay there? And then how did you dive out on your own? Because that can be scary. A lot of accountants, they don't take that leap. They prefer to stick with a position that's paying them and it's stable and they're making a check, they're making money and they're doing what feels right. You, on the other hand, you were not necessarily always looking backwards and doing just the accounting work. You were actually helping people grow and helping people. You were one of the CFOs on their team?
But I was a senior accountant. Yeah. So I was about to be promoted before I left, but I still had my client on the side at that time. Summit was gracious enough to let me keep that client. So I was still serving kind of as their CFO, but I got to
sit. So that was your training was that one client basically that you had?
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, I got to sit on a lot of calls with CFOs, and to Summit's credit, you know, they let their seniors give input with clients. They want your perspective. Like, you're not expected to just be a pure play accountant at Summit, which is really neat about their model.
They were hoping to have trained you to be able to do that because that's also where they would get their talent. I mean, I would assume that they're hoping to get transfer or convert some accountants into CFOs. That's what's hard. That's what I find is hard, is either they don't want to ask the questions. They want all the answers in front of them. I mean, tell me, how hard was this for you as an individual? You seem like somebody that's pretty comfortable in front of people or even in a sales situation. Am I assuming that correctly?
Yeah, I would say I'm a little bit of an atypical accountant in that respect. Like, I love people. I don't love doing like the day-to-day accounting work. I actually just hired a senior accountant and I've been a little embarrassed because I'm like, man, she is such a better accountant than me. Like, she's taught me more about accounting than I knew, which has been awesome. It's kind of confirmed like, oh man, maybe I am better in this advisor role. That's kind of where I naturally have a bent toward. But yeah, so I stayed at Summit for about a year. This was during COVID. And then a position opened up here in Wichita, where I'm based. I was kind of tired of working from home, as we talked about. I had a young, growing family. And it was a lot. It was hard, you know, to work 8 to 5 each day with little kids running around. And so I wanted to work outside the house. Went and worked at Koch Industries here in Wichita, which was awesome. Got to be part of their investment group.
And that's not Coca-Cola. That's like Koch Brothers, right?
Koch Brothers, yeah, K-O-C-H. Yeah, yep.
Yeah, not Coca-Cola.
Yep. So I got to stand behind Charles Koch several times in the Koch cafeteria and watch him pay for his lunch with cash, which was kind of funny. Yeah, so did that, worked in their on their financial reporting team for about a year. And mind you, this whole time, I still had that client on the side, loved it. And they were trying to send me referral work, but I was kind of burning the candle at both ends between my day job, my side client, and having a young family. And so there just came a point where I had to kind of pick a path, and demand was growing enough with my side hustle to where I could leave comfortably and have some income and make it on my own.
Sure. So you ended up going out on your own, doing the thing. And that might have been around the time when I met you, or I first saw your activity online. And it's funny because my co-host also met you right around the same time.
That's right.
And I think
that's right.
You started going hard with the promoting or just asking questions. I remember a lot of your posts early on was just posting certain things and raising a thoughtful question. And that got a lot of activity. You're early. I don't see it as much. I may not be paying attention. But man, your post went semi-viral early on in your days of just out there. You're putting, so give me the thought process in there. Was that to get clients, or was that just to show you're in the game?
So I had a friend of mine who had built a business completely off the back of Twitter. He ran a cleaning company where he like found VAs on Twitter, and he built an audience, and then he used that audience to build a remote staffing company. Shout out to Brian Solentrop, I think it's solely business on Twitter. But he said, wow. Hey, dude, you should just start tweeting. Just see what happens. And so I had to take a week off of work. I had a sports hernia that I had removed. And so I just started tweeting. And I was like, well, if I'm going to use this for business, I will just start talking about problems that agencies are dealing with. And just try to be myself. You know, I think LinkedIn has a little bit of a rap in terms of being more formal and professional. And Twitter is just kind of the wild, wild west. You can kind of speak your mind. And that's where I kind of found some traction, was on Twitter. And that's when I discovered the whole world of tax Twitter and kind of this accounting subculture that was present there. So I found some clients on Twitter. I was picking up followers. I was meeting interesting people like yourself. That was about 6 months before I decided to go out on my own.
Really? Yeah, that was even before you started going out on your own.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, because I do remember, you know, we're talking and you're like, yeah, I haven't necessarily started it yet. So this was still very new, but you had a good personal brand going. You put the yellow behind your face and like it was all intentional and it seemed like you knew what you were doing. You could have fooled me and you could have been doing it for years. So you kind of just picked it up and started toying around with it. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. And it wasn't strictly for business purposes, but I mean, like I said, I have kind of an entrepreneurial bent and it was natural for me to talk about business. And so the more I did that, like the more traction I got. I think the first tweet that I had that went semi-viral was when I talked about like how long a company's P&L should be. It should be like 8 accounts. And it just took off. And
because it resonated with so many people. That's why your tweets did so well, because there were simple things, simple observations that you made or things that you discussed, but it didn't feel like you were pushing an agenda. It just felt like you were speaking to everybody that it resonated with, obviously.
Yeah, that's what it was. And the beauty of Twitter is you have to condense your thought into so few words. It's like a great critical thinking exercise. Like, how can I put this thing that might be a little bit complex in like very simple terms that anyone can understand? And so I loved that part of it. It required a lot of critical thinking. It was interesting to see like what resonated with people and what didn't. Because the things that I felt like I thought the most about would get no traction versus the things that would just kind of come to me and I'd just fire off haphazardly would do much better.
Well, that's, I think most people can speak to that. Anything that you put a lot of thought into is not going to do well, especially on these, unless you already have a following and you're already just throwing out there. Like it's the ones that you just toss out without much thought because it's what came to you.
Yeah.
That tend to resonate. If you try to resonate with people, what I've found from my experience, doesn't necessarily work. But you did a great job at it. And I guess that must have been encouraging too. So tell me about actually starting this on your own and getting your first client, like your first client outside of this one as a side hustle.
When I left my job, my goal was to get to 10K a month in revenue within the first 90 days. And 3 weeks after I had left my W-2, like I was there, which was super encouraging.
One thing a month, how many clients? In 3 weeks.
That was two clients.
Two clients. Look at this, listeners. If you have a vertical and you are marketing it and you're doing some sort of CFO advisory, you could command 5K a month easy.
Yeah. And that's like, I'll talk to CPAs and I'll look at their pricing and it's kind of laughably low. And I think we're afraid to push the boundaries on price because we don't think we'll be able to land clients at that level. But the way I've always thought about pricing is it's a function of client experience. So if I'm going to charge a lot of money, I'm going to deliver an exceptional client experience. Ooh. And what I've learned is like, if you can deliver on the promise that you're selling, like clients will be sticky regardless of the price that you sell to. You know, accountants were so cost focused and ROI focused that the thought of pushing the boundary a little bit on pricing is such a scary thing. But once you do it a few times, it's like, man, why can't I do it again and again? Yeah, I was able to hit my sales target pretty quickly, which
because
really
you believed in it too. That's another thing is you had the confidence and you didn't even have to be that patient because it didn't take you that long, but you had the confidence to be able to go forward with some of these proposals early on. All you need is one yes for that confidence to turn into sound like resolve. Like it does not confidence anymore. You just know that's what you're doing.
And I think too, like I was very targeted in terms of the size of business that I was going to work with. So if someone was doing less than $1 million a year in revenue, I would not have a conversation with them. Higher revenue clients just command higher fees by the nature of their budgets. And so that was something that I set out on from day one. Is, hey, they have to be doing $1 million in revenue or I'm not going to have a conversation with them, which I think ultimately was a smart decision.
Oh, for sure. You were ultra clear on that with your little Twitter bio too. I think you said, I work with 3 million and up agencies or something of the sort. You were very clear about who your audience was and who you were talking to. And that must have made every conversation easy, especially if it's early days and you've got somebody that's potentially looking at you like, can you do my taxes? And you knew you needed to make some money. You could have just taken on anybody. Did you have any early people where you just said, no, we're not a good fit?
Yeah, it's funny because one of the things I kind of quote unquote pride myself on is a low close rate. I don't think people realize, and Jason Statz does a great job of just driving home this point. There is so many people out here who need the work done that we do. Like, we don't believe that, but it's just, it's unreal how big the world is and how big the market is for small business accounting and CFO services are. And so, yeah, there were a lot of clients that I said no to. I was intro'd to people. I had people reaching out via DM saying, you know, I'm doing $500,000 a year. And it's like, hey, that's awesome. I probably won't be a good fit, but here's someone that might. I think the fact that I was able to get my revenue to where I needed it to be to support my family very quickly enabled me to be a little bit pickier early on, which I understand is not the case for everyone.
And you really took your time to get started. It wasn't like you rushed into this or anything. It sounds like you knew in the back of your head you were going to be doing this eventually. So you were sort of just learning and being very patient with your learning. And then when you were ready, you took it on with utmost confidence and poise too, I would say. The way that you executed, you know, you didn't sound like you had a lot of pivots either. Like, it's not like you started with one industry and then switched to another. You went straight after it.
Yeah. And I mean, I think I heard on a podcast once, there's like 120,000 agencies in the US, and I can count like my direct competitors on one hand. So it's like, okay, there's more than enough
you
work
worked
to go
for
around.
One of them. You worked
yeah,
for one
like,
of them. Yeah.
Like, there's more than enough work to go around here. If I can speak to their specific problems and work with the right size agency, preferably being $1 to $2 million in revenue and above, like, I will find clients. It's not a matter of if, but when, which, you know, today, knock on wood, is still the case. Like every business owner, I will say I do have dreams that, like, I'm going to wake up one day and all my clients hire me. Maybe
well,
that's
of course
part of-
that's a big fear,
yeah,
but it becomes less and less of a fear as you get more and more clients and as you hire more and more people, you start worrying about different things too. So let's talk about the a little bit like about the makeup of the firm now. You're 2 years in, right? Or 18 months in. So about a year.
15 months, yep.
And change, yeah. So a little over a year, your first year. Tell me about what the structure is right now.
Yeah, so one thing I will say before I left to do this, you know, I was working a fair bit at my W-2. And my wife said, hey, I'm totally cool if you go do this, but I want you to work less than you are now.
Ooh.
If you're going to.
That's a hard thing. That's when you own your own business, you're always on, right? How are you going to work less? How did you respond to that?
Yeah. So my wife and I were aligned on that. And so I knew that I had to scale slowly if I was going to quote unquote scale, because life at home always came first. I've got 3 kids under 5. My wife stays home. And so that was priority one, was, hey, make enough money to support my family, but don't try to get into hyper growth mode. And so, you know, initially I had a goal of getting 1 client a quarter. I did that pretty quickly over the first like 6 months. I had a tragic death and I lost my little brother about 6 months ago, which kind of hit reset on everything. Sure. And so I slowed down growth, you know, revenue was fine. I got a little bit pickier with the clients that I worked with. So I let some clients go. But when he passed, when my brother passed, it was a shift in that I said, okay, I want to go from having like a nice paying consulting gig, which really is what it was at the time. You know, it was me and a contract bookkeeper, to turn this into an actual business. And so late last fall, I started looking for kind of a rock star senior accountant, potential director of ops one day. And yeah, that individual joined me the first of this year, so 3 weeks ago. And we have a goal to get to about 600,000 in revenue in 2024 and get to
that's a good healthy pace and yep. a good healthy growth rate for a young company to be there on year two, essentially. That's dope. And you're doing it with intention too. You're doing it by calling out the right clients. Tell me some of your marketing efforts now and from when you started too, since we're supposed to be talking about marketing on these social studies episodes. Tell me what you've done, you know, intentionally to market your services.
Yeah. So I'm relatively consistent in terms of posting on LinkedIn. I've kept up my Twitter activity. Really what I think the best marketing hack for me has been really being intentional about providing an above and beyond customer experience. And so I've never had a client churn, like a client has never fired me. I'm sure that'll happen this year, but until it does, I can say that. But what that has led to is a lot of inbound demand from referrals.
Referrals.
And so,
okay. Treat your clients right, like Disney or Apple would, and they will in turn. I mean, essentially, Ron Baker's describing your firm when he talks about what people should do. Jody is describing your firm when he talks about the model firm. You're using that model and you've created something that can now, that led you freedom to raise three kids, not work as much as you were, and to be able to effectively mourn for your brother at the same time, figure what your intention is. That's got to be something hard to deal with. I know you got seven, you know, you're one of seven. So
yeah,
that's impossible. I mean, I can only imagine. So sorry to hear about that, but you were able to juggle everything, and you don't sound like you're too stressed out. You don't sound like this is a big burden on you to be running this firm. Am I wrong?
No, you're totally right. It really hasn't been that stressful. I think being very intentional about finding right fit clients is just so important. Like, I think we underestimate that, but you know, what I do now before I work with a client is I do kind of a one-time fee assessment. And what I tell prospects is I say, hey, I'm going to do this pretty comprehensive financial assessment. You know, this is a two-way street. This is you gauging whether or not you want to work with me and me gauging whether or not I want to work with you, because there's a lot of demand and I'm really
that's
just
such a great thing to tell somebody, because then they actually want to work to become your client too. If they do, I've had people tell me this, and I want to become their clients and I want to work with them. This happened with the latest retreat I just went on. They said I had to apply and be accepted in there. So I wanted to be accepted.
And what it does is it sets the expectation up front, like with your clients. So like if they're not communicating well or they're not timely in their responses, they're probably not going to value working with you, which is totally fine. Like maybe you just need like someone who's just going to be an accountant. You don't need the advisory. Like that's not what you're there for. And you are able to flesh that out through this discovery process, which saves you a lot of heartache and churn down the road. So, yeah.
Right. But you got to be real intentional, and you also have to create that funnel. You have to be able to make choices and have the freedom of choice when you do have inbound leads in a way, right? Are you turning people away too? Like telling them?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah,
I am. Yeah.
Sometimes is that due to capacity or is it mostly due to this is not going to be a good fit?
It's a little bit of both. So I'd like to continue to build slowly. You know, part of what I want to do in building my firm, it is a client acquisition game, but it's really more of a talent acquisition game. And so I want to find very, really, really good people to be able to do the work before I bring them on. And so I'm kind of always quietly recruiting and looking out for talent. The way I found my senior was I came across her on a podcast. She blew me away and I reached out. But I'm also trying to make sure I work stops every day at 4:30 or 5 because of the demands that I have at home.
So you hear that? Put yourself out there and you can get hired too. Like she put herself out there. She was on a podcast and that led to her getting hired by you.
Yeah. Too. Yep. It was awesome.
You know, people got to do their part, but put themselves out there. Sometimes it's hard. People don't want to talk, or some people it's easy to go in front of the camera or go in front of that. So I find that you have done a lot of this stuff intentionally too. Give me some lessons you learned from being a solo practitioner, you know, running your own firm. What are some of the most valuable lessons that you learned in this first year and a half?
Yeah, I think one, it's so cliche and it's the buzzword that everybody uses, but it's proven to be so effective, at least for me, is like having a niche. If you look me up, I run a firm called Agency CFO. When you come to our website, you know what you're getting. You're getting an outsourced CFO for an agency, right? What we do is in the name. So from a positioning standpoint, that has really helped me from a demand perspective, like picking up clients, and then positioning and pricing perspective, like being able to price higher relative to what my generalist competitors might charge. So niching down, one, super critical. Number two, I would say not only niching from an industry perspective, but from a revenue perspective. There's a lot of firms, a lot of agencies out there that are doing less than $1 million in revenue. They might have a need for bookkeeping, but they probably don't have a need yet for CFO. And so if you want to lean into advisory and offer advisory services, like you have to be strict about the size of client that you work with and trust that if you market yourself correctly, those clients will come. Number three, I would say prepare for the loneliness that does come in building your practice alone initially. It was hard. I know it's probably sounding like a lot of sunshine and rainbows, but it's really lonely building your own practice if you don't have someone to do it with. That was part of the motivation to hire someone. It's like, man, I want to have someone that I can lean on and build with. And so just know yourself. You know, you're going to go out on your own. It can be really beneficial to hire someone and build with somebody. I know I've had conversations with Roman. He did that with Stacy and what they're doing with Full Send Finance. It's so helpful to...
I was thinking of Roman a lot during
this
interview. It sounds like his interview and his episode too. It's very similar situations, very different verticals,
yeah,
but similar outcomes for both parties after about a year and a half of doing it.
Yeah.
He's great. Shout out to Roman. He's shouted out in the intro to the social studies. So it's interesting.
Okay, let's go.
You brought him up. Yeah, for sure. Now, can I add something to your third one as a way to prepare for the loneliness? Having a little bit of gratitude for the things that you have accomplished. You just told me,
amen. Yeah.
Right before we started, that you had to sit back and look at it from a different perspective to say, wow, I got to that 10,000 a month and some, and I should be proud of myself where I got, because it is a lot of thankless days because you're not surrounded by a whole lot of people. You're lonely and you're in your own bubble in a lot of ways. You've created your own reality, and all of a sudden you're taking for granted the things that you have done to get here.
Yeah. And I mean, it's funny, just less, you know, about a year ago, it was like, man, if I got to 10K a month, that would be life changing. And it was, like, it totally was. It afforded my family security and enabled me to give myself some runway to actually build this thing a little bit. So yeah, gratitude is super key when you're firm building, especially in the early days, right? As you're trying to acquire clients and find your positioning.
In all days, it's important.
In all days.
I mean, especially in the early days, but especially in the old days too. For somebody like me who's on the other side of it now, I don't do anything at all in my firm. I got to be really grateful for everything I did to get here in those early days. Because in the early days, I was just hustling straight up, working like crazy. Nobody told me to work less. And if my wife told me to work less, I responded by working more because I needed to grow the firm and I needed to do this and this and this. And all the things I did, I'm eternally grateful for now. But it's hard to show that gratitude when it's you get in your own head sometimes too. So that appreciation and that gratitude could go a long way. Give yourself some grace too. If you fail and if you screw something up, that's a lesson that you learn. It doesn't sound like you made too many pivots and learned too many lessons. Everything just came so easy to you, Paul. Tell me something that you screwed up. Tell me something you messed up along the way. I hear all of these achievements and everything great. I want to hear something that you feel bad about, that you did wrong, and that maybe you learned from.
Yeah, there have been many bumps and bruises along the way. I don't want to underplay that reality. One of the things early on, you know, I was so focused on creating an exceptional customer experience. You know, my second client that I took on, you know, I was in 10 meetings a month with this client, which was so wild. And I was like, oh, I'm in their weekly leadership call. And then I have all these one-off calls that I do because it's part of my package. And what I found and what they found is that, like, this isn't tremendously value add. And what we have to keep in mind as advisors, they're looking for us to come to them to solve their problems and to have a little bit of a silver bullet sometimes, right? In business, you're not always going to have a silver bullet when you're coming to a meeting. And so early on, when I set up my packages, I was offering way too much and I was feeling burnt out. And so just being intentional about how you set up your packages and not like burning yourself out. And
when did you notice you were feeling burnt out? What was one of the defining moments where you said, oh, this is too
I think
much.
When I woke up one day and like every day I would have 4 to 5 client meetings, it was like, holy cow, like this is just way too much. it was unreasonable and I couldn't like deliver on the value prop that I was selling. And so, you know, I was afraid to go back to clients and say, hey, can we like cut back the number of times that we're meeting, but keep maybe a similar price? Like I was so afraid about that. And so once I had the courage to ask clients like, hey, what's like really valuable here? Do you like these biweekly cash flow calls? Or could that just be a loom that I send every other week? Mm-hmm. Not being afraid to engage the client on what they really value and then taking action on that was really pivotal. And it was scary. It was afraid to like have to ask like, hey, like, is this helpful? Like, are you liking this? I got a lot of helpful feedback from clients just being willing to ask the question about what's working.
It is really hard to ask people, are you liking this? Because nobody's going to tell you they don't like something. You will resoundingly know if somebody does like something. And I feel like if you have to ask, then you're doing something wrong. Like, it, you know, sometimes when you're doing the right thing, you get some great feedback and they tell you how much you're helping them. But if you don't get any feedback, maybe you should see that as a sign too. Do you have any recollection of some of the responses if you ask people?
Yeah. So one of the things I was doing early was I was on like, you know, a lot of my clients run on EOS and they have their weekly L10 meeting. So my highest package, I was sitting in on the weekly leadership call, which was fine, but it was probably a little bit too involved for what they were needing for me. And so being willing to broach the conversation of, hey, maybe I'm not going to be on your L10 every week, but I'll sit in for a half day on your quarterly offsite and like advise from a financial standpoint. It's like, great. Yeah. Like,
or your monthly financial review, that would be yours. I mean, if they're doing the monthly one too.
So being able to just like dial back scope, but trust that you can still deliver the same amount of value. Like value is not equated with how many meetings you have. And I kind of fell into that trap.
Well, that's also got to pull you, like, I think that's definitely something you should have pulled out on is doing weekly. But in some ways, some people do meet with their clients weekly. I've seen that. If you're in on an L10 meeting every week, not everything is finance related. Not necessarily everything is things that you need to be a part of anyway. So that's a great lesson. And thank you for bringing up EOS. I should do a full episode on that for our listeners. We talk about it all the time. I do it at my firm. And that sounds like a varsity team episode in the future. Thanks for triggering that idea there. But yeah, like, do you also work with your clients to implement EOS now? Is that something that you feel qualified to do or?
No, I mean, they'll ask for my perspective on like, hey, what KPI should we track weekly and monthly and quarterly? Since I've been kind of part of the EOS ecosystem now for a little while with different agencies. They ask for my perspective, but I'm very careful to stay as close to the numbers as I can, right? Because that's how you can let scope creep happen if you try to advise in the wrong lane. But yeah, it's certainly something that clients will ask about. Yep.
This has been very, very valuable, Reverend Paul Seaton, Reverend Swaggy P. Can you share with our students where you got the name Swaggy P and why I'm calling you Swaggy P?
Yeah, so I played a lot of basketball growing up. And I was given a couple nicknames by my AAU teams. One team called me Casper because I was the only Anglo kid team.
Sure.
And then another team just called me Swaggy P because I don't know why. Because it's.
I thought it was a rap name too. I thought it was your rap name back in the day. Or maybe it was just a nickname. Swaggy P, I know why they would call you that because you probably had some swag and your name is Paul. So Swaggy
I
P.
do. I have rapped a little bit. I do have some videos on YouTube that are unlisted under the alias Swaggy P, but those will not be shared with our listeners.
I feel like we need to hear one of those now. I feel like that's what we need to ride out with.
Yeah, those aren't quite at the Scotty Scarano level, but yeah.
I'm not at any level because Scotty Scarano isn't the rapper anyway. It's OKR. So the OKR level, all you have to do is be better than OK. I mean, if that's if those are better than OK. Yeah. Hey, I'm Paul. I'm helping marketing agencies transform their finance function and growth profitably. Paul, that's your LinkedIn bio. And that's what I think our listeners should leave with, is knowing how clear you can be and seeing that clarity in action on how to achieve some financial freedom. I don't know if it would say you're at financial freedom yet, but you're on your way there to creating a business for yourself that you're free to move about in as you like. And it's not a burden. It's not a ball and chain that you're carrying around that's causing you stress. This is creating opportunities for you. I love to hear these stories because it's inspirational for our listeners that may have been doing this for a while, or for anybody that's just thinking about it, getting started out, is you can have a business that works for you.
And I think too, what I would share, Scott, is that you can have a really successful practice that doesn't offer tax. That's something that's very, it's just kind of new in this whole cloud accounting space, is that you can have an accounting practice that doesn't touch taxes, which is a very modern phenomenon, and you don't have that busy season. And so if you're thinking about going out on your own, maybe you are a tax expert. That's awesome. We need more of you. Please. We definitely need more of you. But there is a place to build a practice that doesn't do tax today.
Calm, peaceful practice, yes, that doesn't have to answer to the IRS. You just have to answer to the tax accountants that are doing your clients' taxes.
That's right. That's right.
And those, I'm sure, are a joy.
Yes. And bridging the gap between
your tax. How is your relationship between with you and the tax accountants you work with?
I think it's solid because one of the things that I offer my packages is what I call light business tax planning. And all it really is being a liaison between the CPA and the client, right?
Ooh.
I'm a CPA myself. I know enough to be dangerous. So I'm looking out for my clients. I'm making sure they're setting aside enough cash for their taxes. But a lot of times clients don't know what questions they should be asking their tax accountant, right? And the tax accountant isn't proactive because they have so many clients and this client has only signed up for a compliance level service offering. And so I have found it to be helpful to kind of bridge that gap. And what I offer is to meet with my client's CPAs 2 to 4 times a year. The client doesn't even need to be on the call. And I can just walk through the CPA, what I'm seeing in the numbers and where I think we can make certain strategic decisions. And so I think having someone like a outsourced CFO can really improve the relationship between the CPA and the client, because it's someone who can speak there.
We have a full episode that talks about bridging the gap between, we were talking to not even necessarily CFOs, but bookkeepers, but in that realm, people that do CAS, just CAS, and then the people that do taxes. There's a very frayed relationship between us. We're not, and I'm saying us, I feel like I identify with both parties in a lot of ways. So I see both sides of the argument here. My firm does taxes, but I surround myself with a lot of CFOs and the like, CAS people. Mm-hmm. So I can empathize with both parties. It is hard to find that common ground. So to have somebody be the liaison to bridge that gap, I commend you, sir. Keep doing that. Make it easier for the tax accountants and let them in on the fun too. Try to get them some consulting opportunities too, instead of just feeding off of their back. Say, here, look, you could be doing this with your clients and offer some more. I think a lot of them know they could be doing that, but they're just too busy to even bothered.
That's right.
That's the biggest problem too.
And I think clients get frustrated because they expect their CPA to be an advisor when they're really just paying them to do the compliance work, right? The client doesn't know that they need to be signing up for advisory, and the tax CPA is too busy with other stuff to be proactive about offering more tax advisory packages. And so it can really help bridge that gap and mend the tension that can sometimes arise in those relationships.
We got to value ourselves more.
Amen. Amen.
Just because we're doing compliance, as a lot of accountants, because my firm's pretty much mostly compliance. We're doing some bookkeeping, but it's for the compliance work.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I know how that is. And that relationship is difficult because they may not value you as high as you should be valued. So then you devalue yourself too. When clients know that they can just get the same thing done on TurboTax or at Jackson Hewitt or one of the others, H&R Block, that's a thorn in our side because, you know, we worked hard for this license and to be able to do this. And if you think you could do it yourself, well, then go do it yourself. That's kind of the relationship a lot of, you know, tax accountants have with their clients too. Sometimes it's frayed. So thank you for helping bridge that gap, Paul. I appreciate your sage wisdom here. Rev Run would be proud of Swaggy P over here. I would say you've turned into a good advisor.
Thanks so much for having me, man. Thanks for all you're doing for the accounting community. I've nerded out on your podcast for a while, and so I feel blessed to get to come out here and share with the rest of the community a little bit about what I'm doing.
Oh, we're all blessed. I'll bless everybody now with our new other intro to Accounting High. So I'll bless us with that outro intro. All right.
All right.
Peace out. Class dismissed.
May I have your attention, please?
From cloud accountancy way back to desktop accounting, advisory and tech apps adopt, went solo with the rap, Scotty's still the same, Raleigh is the spot where I edutain, like, share, connect, comment, follow this, and subscribe to our podcast, next one we drop, cause you know we don't stop, it's 24/7 on the Accounting High Live, TikTok clips don't watch, just some shitty tax talk, cleaning up accounting with a bucket and a mop, then we lean back and nod because the class is about to start at Accounting High. Scotty, OKR.
Accounting High. Accounting High.
OKR. Introducing the star of our show. We're gonna have a problem here.